The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
So this was kind of the big social media story in the news. Twitter said that it is based on the behavior of an account. So if an account looks particular...
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are at 12:14 on this Wednesday afternoon, a beautiful Wednesday in the city of Chicago. This is why you live here, that in baseball. So welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Terry Savage is in the studio as well. And Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
I am glad to be here. Everyone's excited about today's show.
Everyone's looking at their 401ks. I think I saw, didn't Fidelity say that they've got a record number now of what, million-dollar accounts? People have saved up $1 million or more?
You know, there are over 168,000 million-dollar 401k accounts. You know, think about this. The max you could put in has been around $14,000, $15,000 a year. But the way the market's taken off, there are a lot, and people have also rolled over previous 401ks. The point is, people have a lot of money now. It's been one heck of a bull market. And what happens is they don't know exactly how to invest within their 401k. They don't know how to invest and save outside the 401k. And boy, is there an army of greedy salespeople waiting for them when they leave the company or retire and roll over their 401k. All those people charging fees and commissions. It's been a nightmare of mine. And now I'm very excited to say, I think someone is providing a good solution.
Well, you've got a column up at terrysavage.com. Once again, I have to say, a very smartly redesigned website. I think people should go check it out. Really, I do. I love
commercial
the new look.
For a guy named Joel Matthew at a company called Fortress CG.
Yeah.
This really deserves to be a commercial. So log it and I'll pay for it, because this guy dragged me.
Mark that
I said,
down,
I like my old website. And they came up with two or three versions. I said, no, I don't want to. And finally I said, okay, I give up. Make me modern.
Let the experts be the experts.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so, but this column is about this new sort of matchmaking service to help you find an investment advisor.
People email me and post on Ask Terry at terrysavage.com all the time. I need a financial planner. I need somebody to manage my money. I need stock advice. I need this. And I'm in an awkward position because I really, unless somebody's in some dire, about to make a terrible mistake, I just say go to websites like NAPFA, NAPFA.org, the fee-only financial planners, and make sure you get a certified financial planner. It's a pretty blind kind of a thing. So there is a woman I met 3 years ago when she started this. Well, when I say she's younger, she reminds me of me. Her heart's in the right place kind of a person. And she has a show on PBS. It's all around the country called Wealth Track. Her name is Pam Kruger. And when I met her at the financial planning conference 3 years ago, she said, I'm putting together something that's really going to be different. It's like Match.com or eHarmony to put people together with financial planners. But like you and I know, do you know? I don't know. But everybody tells me that it's all married people on Match.com cheating on their wives.
I do not know that, and I resent the implication. Okay,
well, I know you wouldn't know it, right, of course. But the fact is, you don't want to be blindly matched. And what she has done is created only a couple of hundred financial planners across the country. Planners cannot pay to get endorsed by her and put on the service. They have to be fee-only, fiduciary, i.e., putting your interests ahead of their own and disclosing all costs and commissions and working solely on your behalf. And she vets out their history, their experience, because they all have to be experienced. And so you can do this online at wealthramp.com. You put in your age, your zip code, but how important is it that they be nearby? How frequent? And then you have these buckets where you just move these circles and say, this is important to me, like a one-time financial plan or a regular monthly checkup or tax-efficient
investing. She's got an algorithm, she said, that will match you up with the
exactly.
Person.
It's not just these are 12 names in your local thing. It's the age you are, the goals you are, the income you're at, the experience you've had, and so forth. It is really neat. So I did it blindly. I mean, I used my email address so I'd get the report, but I put in just an average person, you know, somebody in their 40s with this is the income, this is what I've got saved. And I clicked. Now you get three recommendations. So this is interesting. The first recommendation was someone I know in town, Randy Bruns, who I think is one of the great financial planners. And I went, oh my gosh, we were on the phone together as I did this. The second thing is, she doesn't just give your name to all the financial planners. You have to contact the financial planner, or she will make an email introduction,
okay,
and the fee.
And what the fee will be?
With a fee, I'm going to tell you this because this is important. These are fee-only financial planners. That you pay an annual fee, their standard annual fee, they can't raise it, and she has a deal with the financial planners, because she is one herself, to take a piece of the fee that you would pay, not any higher fee than they've been charging for accounts. So it's fully disclosed. You're paying an annual fee for financial planning or whatever the fee is. She... or if you pay,
and it's okay with you that she's making money off this.
Yeah, because, I mean, do-gooders, even you and me, have to make some money somewhere, but it's so fully disclosed, and she makes sure that they haven't raised their fees to cover this extra expense of paying.
All right, there's a link for it, right? You can find the information.
It's called wealthramp.com. You can read the whole thing, but I think it's a time has come.
TerrySavage.com. All right, we're going to take a break, come back and talk about where were you 10 years ago?
Oh, I remember.
You've got less hair now than then. Steve Bertrand here. Terry Savage is in the studio as well, although she's a little distracted. She's watching the Apple event, and I think she just ordered a new Apple Watch.
I haven't been wearing my old Apple Watch because it was big and square and it was a pain in the neck to always charge it. But
so
the new one is
Apple's got
thinner.
Their big unveil right now going
right
on.
Right now. And so we haven't seen everything, but by the end of the day, you'll see a whole list of what's new. But they have announced, I guess, the Apple Watch, the new Series 4, and it's going to be round. I like the idea that it's round.
Well, there it is. Tim Cook came up with an innovative idea, a round watch. And another customer. The government said that U.S. median household income was up last year to $61,372.
See? Hallelujah. 3 years in a row, I think.
Income. I think this year's increase was a little less than the two previous years. But, right, income going up, showing that the job squeeze is having an impact.
Wait, guess what? Inflation just increased just basically met. I mean, income increase just basically matched inflation. So if you think you're treading water, you are.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The inflation-adjusted median income remains at about the same as it was in 1999. So household income, essentially adjusted for inflation, hasn't gone up since 1999. A part of that was the big recession, the Great Recession, and the impact on that. And here we are marking 10 years this weekend.
Well, didn't you feel good in 99? Remember that was the dot-com boom?
Yeah, that was the big thing, right?
It was huge productivity. No joking about this. There was that huge spurt of productivity we had from all the technology that was just, I mean, that was before iPhones, but that was...
That's when the TV show started about money and all the money magazines were taking off,
right? Well, that was earlier in the 90s. But yeah, we Americans felt pretty good in 1999 before the dot-com bust. We could sense that something was happening in the economy. Now, not all Americans, because technology, by its essence, did displace some jobs. What we had in 2008 was a complete financial crisis. That wasn't because technology had outsourced workers. That's because the economy slowed down and actually started shrinking for a couple of quarters.
So Tim Geithner, I said Paul Bernanke and Hank Paulson all were together at an event today for the Brookings Institute talking about what they did 10 years ago and essentially saying they did the right thing. Looking back?
You know, I remember writing a column then, as distasteful as it was, some of the things the government did were necessary, and some of the other things were totally misguided. I mean, they took away those General Motors dealerships. They basically nationalized the country. If you can go back, and I'm sure somebody's done some great historical books, there were some things that even at the time or in hindsight were not so pleasant. But look, here we are today, 10 years later. And really, I think the downest point was not so much in the fall when Lehman, which shocked everybody,
right.
And I remember where
that's,
I was,
I think
collapsed.
That's the anniversary we're going to mark.
That's the anniversary
weekend,
we're marking now. But the worst part was after the inauguration, and Barack Obama was inaugurated. Don't forget, he was a new president, just like Trump was a new president. And he managed pretty well to organize things with the help of Bernanke.
With the Bush administration, yeah, right.
But in March of 2009, when the market really was falling, it was Dow 5,700, 6,700, as I recall. And I know I was on every radio and TV show. That was the scary part, because there was a way to measure. And all I can remember is saying, hey, don't sell now, keep investing if you're young, da-da-da-da-da. Now here we are 10 years into a bull market, because March marked the low of the market.
10 years. Terry Savage, thanks for coming by today. Check out that column, find your new investment advisor and all that.
Exactly. Now, just one more question.
Okay.
We're going to be 10 years from now. What do you think you should be doing with your investments today? The next show.
All right, we'll do that next week.
And,
bring some investments for me.
I'm going to bring chocolate. That's always a good investment.
That's the next best thing.
Wasting away.
All All right, thanks very much, Eric Rung. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. And that is the new entry music for Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business.
I stepped on a pop top and blew up my flip-flop.
What's going on, Frank? How are you?
Good, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You know, we talked a little bit a couple of weeks ago. I think it might have been with Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky about Bo Wrigley and the fact that he was getting involved in this company, Sutera, I think it's called, that is producing or selling medical marijuana. Interesting sort of thing. You go from gum in Chicago to medical marijuana in Florida. And now we get word that he's going to partner with Jimmy Buffett. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so shockingly, Jimmy Buffett turns out to be very interested in medical marijuana.
I mean, you talk about a marketing marriage made in heaven.
Exactly. His Coral Reefer band is now a Coral Reefer brand of medical pot. They are teaming up with Bo Wrigley, as you say, Surterra, and Jimmy Buffett to market some vape pens, lotions, edibles, and a whole lot more medical marijuana goodies. But you got to wait if you want it in Illinois, apparently.
Well, and you're not kidding when you say the Coral Reefer brand, because that's what they're going to call it, right? Coral Reefer
Marijuana. Yeah, it's perfect.
And so the numbers, I was looking at in this article written by Danielle Braff, 9 states now have legalized marijuana, 30 states allow it for medical marijuana. So here in Illinois, we're still under, I think, the testing period, but it looks like it's up and running. 42,000 number as far as patients in Illinois. I think that's a little less than what they expected, although with the governor's changes, these opioid changes, that could go up. But it seems to me like that Jimmy Buffett is getting involved in this, and maybe Bo Wrigley getting involved in this as well, with the idea that marijuana is going to be legal across the country one day, and they might as well be up and running and already work on the wrappers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Sutera has licenses already in Florida and Texas. So we won't be seeing it here in Illinois yet. But as you say, as it rolls out further, and especially the recreational use, this branding is going to become very important. And also, I'm interested to see, liquor companies, liquor distributors, right, are getting involved, Corona Beer Brewer, Constellation Brands. It's like an oil company getting into solar.
Exactly. They know what's coming next. I mean, people are buying, I think, drinking less and less beers. The millennials, we've talked about that. And so they got to figure out a way to, spread out a little bit, diversify. I'm waiting for Oreos to get involved here.
Yeah, and I think they should just do that, adapt the Wrigley slogan, the double your pleasure, double the fun for double men, and just, two vape pens for the price of one, maybe.
Right, you could do the whole Juicy Fruit and Coral Reefer somehow, tie those together.
They ought to hire us, man.
I know, I don't know why they have. What are they thinking? By the way, this isn't really on our agenda, but have you seen that, I know that you're the foodie on the show, and that White Castle is selling their meatless sandwiches now nationwide, the Impossible Slider, they call it. Did you see that?
Yeah, I have seen that. I have eyeballed that menu item when I've gone to the White Castle at Addison and Elston a time or two, and I have yet to get up the nerve to order it. I always just go for the cheese sliders. Have you had it yet?
I haven't had it, but they say it bleeds, which is, right? It's like biting into a rare piece of beef. It's got the juice that looks like, well, blood.
If something hasn't actually died from my meal, I don't feel it's complete.
Right, you don't think, okay, and if it's faux blood, that doesn't work for you?
No.
Let's go to Union Station. I haven't been taking the train in the past couple of years, but I'm in and out of Union Station, and, it's just, it's one of those sort of misfits. It was built for a time, and it never really was able to adapt, at least underneath. The Great Hall is wonderful, but there are great plans to overhaul that, right? They, in the first round, didn't go over so well, so they've come around with a second round to sort of upgrade Union Station.
Yeah, so there was in June this proposal that was a boxy glass apartment building on top of the head house, and it just looked like somebody, took a suburban office building and dropped it on top. And so Alderman O'Reilly and the community objected, and so we now have a new proposal, and it's a lot more visually attractive. It's got a 1.5 acre park, and kind of a revamped plan for the building as well.
Danny Ecker wrote the story, and you just used the term head house as well, and it has nothing to do with Coral Reefer. But so when you say head house, though, what we're talking about is that's the sort of iconic building that we think of as Union Station, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So they would develop up on top of that, but not as much as they were going to at the first place.
And just a more appealing, a visually more appealing design. And then there's going to be a new skyscraper building, an office building tower next to that spot. And
just south of it,
looks
right?
Like BMO Harris is negotiating to be the main tenant there.
So tell me how all that fits, because I know the developers, Riverside Investment and Development, they're trying to get approval for it. Of course, it takes a lot of cash. And then here comes BMO Harris. They're wanting to consolidate their Chicago office space. So if they are... It looks like they're almost ready to or considering signing on to a skyscraper that may or may not be built.
Yeah, so I think that they're, you know, trying to bundle all this together so that the aldermen and ultimately the city council in total will approve of this. You know, it makes it more appealing if you've got a ready-made tenant coming right in. It's a proposal for a 1.5 million square foot skyscraper that's next to this Union Station redevelopment, and BMO Harris would take as much as 500,000 square feet of that space as they consolidate their operations. So, you know, the idea is to kind of tie it all up in a bow so that O'Reilly's office says, okay, the design is improved and, you know, we'll approve this building because there's a big long-term tenant, and it just makes it more palatable for everybody.
Any idea on a timetable, Frank?
No, the deal's not done with BMO, so, you know, sources say that they're close to finalizing it. They would aim to move into the new Union Station Tower possibly in 2022. So I guess we're looking at, you know, about a four-year time frame, but assuming, again, that there's a lot of city approvals that have to come before that.
All right, there you go. Read more about that at chicagobusiness.com. Feeling better now, two-game lead?
Oh, yeah, I felt like Quintana really stepped up. It's going to be a white-knuckle ride, though.
And so did Justin Wilson. All right, bud, we'll talk again in a week.
Thanks, bye.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. When you think of Chicago in the winter, you may think about snow-covered streets, holiday shopping, and those horse-drawn sleighs. Well, that last one could be no longer. Another year of some aldermen trying to put the horse and buggy drivers out of business in the city. The reason? Safety concerns. Chicago streets are busier than ever with more and more cars, which means an increased risk for the very slow-moving buggies and sleighs around the area. But it's not just the aldermen's word, so there are a few more steps throughout the process, and we'll have to see how things develop before November when the owner's licenses are renewed. And Naperville-based baking company Wilton Brands found some renewed life as they accepted a buyout from German food company Dr. August Oetker. The German company will be buying Wilton Brands from a U.S. private equity firm, and thankfully the suburban-based company will continue to operate right here in Illinois. There's muffin holding them back as the deal is scheduled to be completed by the end of the year, so there's clearly no loafing around here, am I right? Okay, I'll see myself out. I'm Bennett Wakenight. And that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital news editor for the Chicago Tribune and has her eyes on social media for us. Randy, welcome back.
Hey, Steve.
Okay, how many years... have we talked about the impact of social media on kids?
It's a never-ending study since 2007.
So this study, maybe the one that you brought in to me by Common Sense Media, it puts it all to rest?
Actually, I don't think it does.
No?
I think it kind of does the opposite.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of conflicting opinions on social media.
I read the article about the study anyway, to show that really social media isn't the factor, that people shouldn't be worried about their kids in social media.
So. Right, and so that's what's interesting, because I'm sure we'll have another study coming out in a few weeks that says the opposite. Right.
Let me read some of these statistics, and there's their numbers from 2012 and 2018. So obviously 2018, much more social media than 2012. They asked kids 13 to 17 years old. One, I get along well with my parents. Now, in 2012, 88% said that. More in 2018, 93%. I'm happy with my life. Kids are more happy with their life now than they were then. I like myself. It's about the same, but still the response is more positive in 18 than it was in 12. There are a lot of things I can do well. That's about the same. Compared to other people my age, I feel normal. 80% in 2018, 73% in 2012. So if social media is having this overwhelming, you know, effect on all these kids, these numbers don't show that.
Right. And so what I think is interesting, the most interesting thing I found from this study is that a lot of teens, they see social media as being not representative of real life, but they know that and they acknowledge it and they don't let it affect them.
And that's subsequent. Another study, that's the same study.
Yeah, this is the same study, a different story.
So their parents might be freaking out about it, but
the kids are all right.
They know what it is. The kids are all right.
The kids are all right.
Except the kids are the ones getting plastic surgery younger. We read all these stories. The kids are...
See, and that's what I was saying, conflicting studies.
Well, is it that we are taking... I mean, is it that we're sort of conflating anecdotal evidence?
That's kind of what I think it is. You know, there's always that one or two people that are outside the norm, and those are the people that really get all the attention. So
you write the story about them, and we think it applies to everyone.
You get the clicks,
Steve. Right. You get the clicks. And okay, so again, I'm not worried anymore about my teenagers and social media. And
you want plastic surgery.
Plastic surgery, maybe. Actually, I don't have teenagers anymore, so it makes it much easier to give up the
You're
worry.
You're out of the study.
I am out of the study. Okay, let's go to Facebook and AI and how... I thought Facebook could already tell everything I was doing.
You know, I thought so too, but maybe that's Google. Maybe we're getting confused.
Okay, so Facebook is working on, what, developing artificial intelligence that can identify racist bots, or what's this about?
So this story that I sent you from The Verge is about how Facebook is working on AI to find out what's offensive in a meme or a photo.
Tell me that again. How's that work then?
So basically, Facebook will be able to scan all of the, for example, Colin Kaepernick memes and find out whether or not these are offensive and whether or not it should kick them off the site.
And again, though, if someone's posting a nude photo or they're
right.
posting a photo of the Vietnam child, the massacre, things like that, Facebook already knew that and would take that down. So how
right.
is this different from what we're talking about?
From what I could tell, it was a little tricky to find out, but this one's looking more at the wording and those memes and whether or not that's offensive.
So maybe Facebook doesn't know all, but given this, soon
they're
they will.
They're working on it, yes.
Randy Schaefer, thanks very much for coming by.
Of course, good to see you.
Follow Randy and the rest of the Tribune News Room on social media at Chicago Tribune. We'll talk again next week.